When Pig Iron McCord and Jason Harding rode into Big Rock some days later, they rode right past Tom Burke. Though never having seen him, they didn't realize it. Pig Iron and Harding headed straight for Longmont Saloon, while the buckboard they had just passed, containing Tom Burke and his family, continued on toward the railroad station. Tom had driven in from Umber Knot so he could catch the afternoon train. Tom's 10-year-old daughter, Sue Ann, had been bribed by the promise of a sarsaparilla, but Buddy had needed no inducement. He'd come willingly. When they reached the depot, Tom stopped the team and set the brakes on the buckboard. He left for a few minutes to check his suitcase and buy his ticket. Then he came back to sit on the buckboard and wait for the train with his family. Because trains were the town's contact with the rest of the world, nearly every arrival and departure were major events. Therefore, the depot platform was crowded with men, women, and children.
Pop, I know bulls near about as good as you do. You sure you don't want me to come along?
Not this time, buddy. Maybe next year.
All right, next year. You think I won't remember that, but I will.
Oh, I've no doubt but that you'll remember. Well, here it comes.
Tom stepped down from the buckboard, then reached for a small valise. He saw his suitcase, along with a dozen other bags, on the little steel-wheeled cart that was being rolled out to the track, where it would be loaded onto the baggage car. Tom stood alongside the buckboard as the train arrived. The train slowed, then stopped.
Well, this is it.
Tom kissed Joellen and Sue Ann goodbye. Then he put his hand on Buddy's shoulder.
Take care of them while I'm gone.
I will, Pop, Tom. Kiss me goodbye again?
Tom chuckled, then came back and kissed her. During the embrace, she held him very hard.
Easy, darling. I'm only going to be gone a couple of weeks.
I know.
Tom kissed her once more, then walked out to the train. Joellen and her two children watched as Tom climbed onto the train and disappeared inside. After a few more minutes, the train began to pull away from the station. Joellen could no longer see Tom, but just in case he could see them, she wanted them to all be there when he took his last look back. For that reason, they stayed right where they were until all that could be seen of the departing train was its smoke hanging in the distant sky. Suddenly and unexpectedly, Joellen's body quaked as she shivered.
Why did you do that? Oh, no reason. Ben says when you shiver like that, it means someone just stepped on your grave.
Don't be saying such things.
It's just a joke, Mom.
Well, it's not a very funny one.
By coincidence, Smoke Jensen was in town the same afternoon that Tom Burke left for Texas. And though he had come to run a few errands, he allowed himself enough time to stop by Longmont's to have a drink. The owner of the saloon, Lewis Longmont, was a lean, hawk-faced man with strong, slender, always clean hands and long fingers with nails that were carefully manicured. Lewis had been Smoke's friend for many years, and though he was sitting at his special table in the back, he got up and came over to the bar specifically to serve Smoke, pouring his drink from a special bottle he kept just for his friend. Lewis was dressed in a black suit with a white shirt and dark ascot. He wore low-heeled boots and a pistol hung in a tied-down holster on his right side. The saloon owner was an enigma to many people. On first glance, he was just another dandy. But in fact, he was worth a great deal of money. And in addition to the saloon, he owned a large ranch up in Wyoming, several businesses in San Francisco, and a rather significant share of a railroad.
Did you hear about Billy Petrie?
No. What about him?
They found his body about 50 miles south of here.
His body?
Yeah. He'd been shot. Sheriff took the noon train down to see about it. Looks like Tatum may have shot him to keep him from slowing him down. So much for friendship.
I'm not at all surprised. Tatum struck me as the type of person who might do something like that.
You crazy bitch!
When Smoke looked around, he saw that a big man had just hit one of the bar girls.
You come back here!
The girl ran from him.
Who's that?
He gave his name as Pig Iron McCord. He's a stranger in town. Must have just come in today.
Lewis started to pull his pistol, but Smoke put out his hand to stop him.
Wait, no need for that yet.
The big man started toward the girl a second time.
Leave the girl alone, McCord.
How'd you know my name?
Smoke didn't answer.
So you heard of Pig Iron McCord, have you? What have you heard? That I'm not someone you mess with?
What makes you think I would have heard of a worthless pile of shit like you?
Well, you will have heard of me by the time I get through with you. Then I'm gonna settle accounts with that whore.
Pig Iron started towards Smoke, but he stopped when Smoke snapped a quick slashing left into Pig Iron's face. Pig Iron rushed Smoke, and Smoke stepped to one side, causing Pig Iron to slam into the bar. Pig Iron turned to face Smoke a second time.
Well, why don't you stay in one place, you yellow-bellied bastard?
I haven't gone anywhere. Come on if you want me. Come get me. I'm right here.
Again, Pig Iron lunged, and again he missed. Finally, he gave that up as a fruitless tactic and raised his fist in front of his face. For the next few minutes, the men circled each other, holding their fists doubled in front of them, each trying to test the mettle of the other. Pig Iron swung a club-like swing that Smoke leaned away from and then pressed the attack. So far, Pig Iron hadn't landed a single blow, and Smoke was glad as hell he hadn't. He had a feeling that if just one of Pig Iron's blows landed, it would be like getting kicked by a mule. Then Smoke saw an opening, and he took it. He timed it just right and landed a solid right on Pig Iron's already smashed nose. Then when Pig Iron put both hands over his nose, Smoke drove his fist hard into Pig Iron's solar plexus. As Pig bent over, stunned by the blow, Smoke finished it with a roundhouse right to the jaw. Pearly saw a man in front of him slip his pistol from his holster, aiming at Smoke. Dropping, Pearly pulled his own pistol, then brought it down hard on the man's head. The would-be shooter fell forward across Pig Iron's prostrate form, the pistol in his hand clattering to the floor.
Oh, damn, that some bitch made me drop my boiled eggs.
Come on home, I'll have Sally boil you up a dozen. I reckon you've earned them.
Smoke? What do you think we should do about these two? Monty's gone.
Throw a bucket of water over them and let them go. I don't think they'll bother anyone else. I seem to be the one that pissed them off.
What about me?
Yeah, well, maybe you better stay out of sight until they're both gone.
When Smoke and Pearly stepped out in front of the saloon, Smoke saw that Pearly had picked up three of the dropped boiled eggs and was brushing them against his shirt.
I thought you dropped those.
Yeah, I did. But the floor wasn't that dirty.
Tobacco squids, ground out cigarettes, cigarette butts, spilt beer, whiskey, and other things I don't even want to know about. And you say it isn't that dirty.
Pearly was just about to take a bite of one of the refurbished eggs when he got a funny expression on his face and pulled the egg away from his mouth.
Yeah, you're right. They're probably pretty dirty, aren't they?
I'd say they were.
Seeing a stray dog under the porch, Pearly tossed the eggs to the animal.
Well, you'll have Sally cook me a dozen eggs, you say.
An even dozen.
Those would probably be better anyway.
I'm sure she'll be flattered that you think so.
Smoke and Pearly rode out of town as an unsteady Pig Iron McCord and his equally groggy partner were tossed out of the saloon. It was dark by the time Pig Iron and Jason reached the mesa where Tatum had told him he would meet him.
You sure this is the place? I don't see no one here.
You think you're gonna put up a sign or something? Oh.
Pig Iron put his hand on his jaw and worked it back and forth a couple of times.
Well, that son of a bitch nearly broke my jaw.
Yeah. Whoever hit me nearly broke my head. But the hell did you start that fight for in the first place?
I didn't start it. That Jensen fella did. I was just having a little fun with one of the whores, and next thing I know, he was coming after me like I'd stepped on his boots or something. Did you hear that?
What? That owl?
That ain't no owl. Like it's not, it's one of Tatum's half-breeds.
That's an owl.
Looking back at him, Pig Iron smiled. Then he raised his hand to his lips. A moment later, a man appeared out of the darkness. He was obviously an Indian, and his appearance startled Jason, who jumped. But Pig Iron held his hand out to stop him.
This is Russell Swift Bear. Where's Tatum? Come.
Pig Iron and Tatum followed Swift Bear for a short distance until they came to a little draw. There, several shadowy figures sat around the flickering campfire. Tatum came over to greet the two men.
Did you find out what I wanted to know?
About Tom Burke? Yeah, I found his ranch. It's about 7 miles northwest of Big Rock. Burke ain't there, though.
Burke ain't there? What do you mean he ain't there? Where is he?
He went down to Texas.
God damn! He's moved!
No, he ain't moved. He just went to Texas to get some bulls, they were saying. His family's still there at the ranch. It's a place called Timber Notch.
His family? Well, who's he got in his family?
Don't know. Didn't get all that. Just heard that his wife and kids were staying back at the ranch.
How many hands working at the ranch?
I didn't find that out.
How do you expect me to plan anything if you don't get all the information I need to...
Tatum stopped and looked more closely at Pig Iron's face.
What the hell happened to you?
What do you mean?
I mean, you've always been an ugly son of a bitch, but damn if you ain't uglier now than the last time I saw you. You been beat up?
He got into a fight with Smoke Jensen.
Oh, you let him whip you like that?
He got in a lucky punch.
Yeah, well, now we both got a case against Smoke Jensen. He's the one killed Fuller and Howard. He killed Billy, too.
You ask me, he's the one we should go after instead of Tom Burke.
Nah, not yet. I'll get around to taking care of him when the time comes, but that time ain't here yet. Did you boys eat any supper?
No.
Now there's probably some beans left in the pot.
Getting their kits from their saddlebags, Pig Iron and Jason went over to the little black pot that was suspended over the fire and helped themselves. Tatum climbed up on a rock and looked toward the distant horizon, approximately where he thought Burke's ranch might be. Tomorrow, he would put his plan into operation. It was a good plan, and the beauty of it was, it didn't matter whether Burke was there or not. In fact, it might just even be better. The morning sun, a bright red orb just beginning to gather warmth and brilliance, rose in the east. A dark gray haze was still hanging in the notches, though it was already beginning to dissipate like drifting smoke. Timbered foothills, covered with blue pine and golden aspen, marched down from the higher elevations. One of the mountains, scarred by some ancient cataclysmic event of geology, shone blue-green in the early morning light.
Buddy, don't forget you need to get that cow milked.
I'm gonna do it, Mom, soon as I'm dressed.
And put on a coat. It's cold this morning.
Unnoticed by any of the residents of the ranch, 10 riders sloped down the side of a nearby hill, their appearance making an ugly scar on this idyllic scene. The leader of the group was Jack Tatum. Raul Sanchez was riding directly behind Tatum. Although he wasn't technically second in command because Tatum knew that some of his men wouldn't accept a Mexican in that role, he was probably the one Tatum depended on more than any other. Behind Sanchez rode Pig Iron McCord. Pig Iron's face still showed signs of the beating he had taken the day before. One eye was swollen shut, his nose was flattened, his lips were puffy and deformed, and there were scars on his chin and jaw. The next three in the line of riders who were coming single file down the side of the mountain were Jason Harding, Orville Clinton, and Dirk Wheeler. They were petty outlaws who had been in and out of jail several times over the years, but even though all three were wanted men. The government didn't consider any of them important enough to even go to the expense of having reward posters printed for them. Like Pig Iron, Jason had been in town the day before, and also like Pig Iron, he was showing the effects. He had a large knot on top of his head, the result of that pistol being brought down hard on his cranium. In addition to Raul Sanchez, there was another Mexican in the group, Paco Arino. Perry Blue Horses and Russell Swift Bear rode just behind Raul Sanchez. Blue Horses and Swift Bear were half-breed Indians who were equally unwelcome in both Indian and white society. The last rider in the group was a man simply known as Jim. Jim was completely alone, not only within his group, but in most of the territory he roamed, for he was black. Jim was a big, muscular man who seldom spoke, but whose eyes and demeanor did little to hide the hatred that smoldered within him. When they reached a rock outcropping that was no more than 100 yards from the house and outbuildings, Tatum gave a silent hand signal to put his men in place.
All right, boys, get ready.
All but Blue Horses and Swift Bear raised rifles to their shoulders, waiting for an order from Tatum. Blue Horses and Swift Bear also had rifles, though for this particular operation, they were using bows and arrows. The door to the outhouse opened, and a man who had entered it a few moments earlier now exited, hooking his suspenders over his shoulders as he did so.
Now!
Blue Horses aimed for the man at the outhouse, and he had the satisfaction of following his arrow in its swift flight all the way across the open space between them until it buried itself in the man's chest. Now Blue Horses and Swift Bear were shooting fire arrows into the compound. The bunkhouse and the barn were quickly enveloped in flames. Within a few minutes, the hired hands ran from the bunkhouse, and that was exactly what Tatum wanted. Within moments, all were down.
Hold it! Hold your fire! I think we got them all!
What about from the house?
Anyone hear any shooting come from the house?
I didn't hear nothing.
You boys hear anything?
Both the Indians shook their heads in the negative.
It could be they're already dead. Maybe nobody was there in the first place.
Tatum led his men down to the main house. There were four bodies on the ground. A hand who was killed as he left the outhouse, and the three who had run out from the bunkhouse. The outlaws approached the main house cautiously, not sure who was still inside or even if whoever was inside was still alive. Tatum gave the signal, and his men moved into positions he had assigned them.
All right, boys, let's go!
Tatum started toward the back door, then he stepped to one side, indicating that Clinton should go in first. Clinton hesitated for just a moment. Then he burst in through the door. As he did so, he caught a charge of double-aught buckshot from a 10-gauge Greener shotgun. Looking cautiously around the door frame, Tatum saw a boy of about 12 trying desperately to reload the shotgun he had just fired.
Hold it right there, boy. You're pretty damn handy with that scatter gun.
Not handy enough. If I was, you'd be dead too.
No, you got a big mouth. Where are the others?
What others? There ain't no one here but me.
No, you expect me to believe you're here all alone?
That's what I said.
Where's your pa?
He's down in Texas buying bulls.
What about your ma?
I told you, nobody else is here.
Looking over toward the sideboard, Tatum saw a plate of biscuits and bacon.
Uh-huh. You planning on eating all this by yourself, were you?
Let me go! Who are you people? What are you doing here?
An attractive woman and a young girl were dragged into the kitchen.
Looky what we found.
Are you Mrs. Burke?
It's none of your business who I am.
Almost distractedly, Tatum backhanded Sue Ellen, knocking the little girl against the wall.
What are you doing?
You don't want the little girl hit anymore. Answer the question, woman. Are you the wife of the jury foreman who sentenced me to hang?
Yes. I'm only sorry that the state didn't get the job done.
Ah, good. Well, that's all I wanted to know.
What do we do with them?
Kill them.
Well, you sure? Seems to me if we keep the woman alive, we could have a little fun with her.
Tatum pointed his gun at the boy.
I saved you till last so you could watch your mama and sister die. Well, I guess you think your mama and sister are in heaven, huh?
I know they are.
Uh-huh. Well, then look at it this way. You won't be apart very long, as I'm about to send you to heaven to be with them.
Uh-huh. I'll get around going to heaven. But first, I'm gonna wait for you in hell so I can soak your ass in kerosene and watch you burn, you sorry son of a bitch!
Gutsy little bastard, ain't he?
Like I said, kid, you got a big mouth. Remember, this has to look like the work of Indians.
Tatum looked back toward Joe Allen's body. That was when he saw for the first time the gold chain with diamond pendant that was around her neck.
Yeah, I reckon I'll just take that as a little souvenir.
He grabbed the chain and hung it around his own neck.
All right, let's go. Get busy. We can't hang around here all day.
The men went to work as ordered, scalping and mutilating the bodies. Perry Blue Horses and Russell Swift Bear left a few more arrows around.
Hey, Jack. Old Clinton here's still alive.
He can't be still alive. Hell, that greener pert in there took out all his innards.
Yeah, it did that all right. Well, what do we do with him?
Leave him. He'll die soon enough.
Nah, we can't leave him here. This is supposed to be the work of Indians, remember? Drag him back to the horses and throw him belly down across his. We'll take him somewhere else to get rid of him.
After a few more minutes of leaving Indian sign, Tatum ordered his men away. And dragging the nearly lifeless body of Clinton with them, they mounted and rode off. 3/4 of an hour later, they were 10 miles south. It was Cal who discovered the carnage at Timber Notch Ranch. He had been riding the fence line when he saw the smoke. Realizing that so much smoke had to mean a burning building, he rode hard to get there. From the looks of the smoke, the fire had a pretty good start, so he wasn't sure he'd be able to do anything to help once he arrived, but he intended to be there to help nevertheless. His first suspicion that something was wrong was when he reached the place and saw that while the fire outside was still raging, not a soul was attempting to fight it. The barn was burning and the stock was still in the corral, gathered in a frightened bunch at the far end. The horses were wild-eyed and restless. The milk cows were milling about as if dazed. Although the barn, bunkhouse, and granary were on fire, the main house and the outhouse were not. It was then that he saw someone lying on the ground near the outhouse.
Oh, sugar.
The man on the ground was the foreman of Timber Notch, Ben Goodpasture. Ben had an arrow sticking from his body, and he'd been scalped. Various positions around the burning bunkhouse lay the bodies of Tom Burke's remaining ranch hands.
Mrs. Burke! Mrs. Burke! Mrs. Burke, are you here? Mrs. Burke!
Cal darted up the steps and into the kitchen. There, just inside the kitchen door, he saw young Buddy's body. Like the hands outside, Buddy had been scalped. Mrs. Burke had been scalped as well as mutilated. Both breasts had been cut off. Only the little girl was neither scalped nor mutilated, though there was blood on her face, as if she'd been beaten before she was shot. It was nearly noon by the time he got back. Smoke, Sally, and Pearly were just sitting down to eat when Cal came in.
Cal, good. You're just in time. Wash up and...
Sally stopped in mid-sentence as she stared at Cal.
Good heavens, Cal. What is it? You look as if you've seen a ghost.
It's Mrs. Burke.
Joellen? She's here?
Not just Mrs. Burke. It's her, the boy, the little girl, Ben, and all the hands. All of them, every one of them.
What?
They're dead. Every one of them. I just got back from their place. Looks like they were attacked by Indians.
Indians? That's impossible. There aren't any warring Indians around here.
Well, they burned the barn, the bunkhouse, the granary. There's arrows all over the place, and every one of them's been scalped.
Oh, God in heaven! Smoke, what will we do?
If it's already done, there's nothing we can do. Except see to it that Tom gets the word.
Oh, that poor man.
The lunch Sally had just put on the table went uneaten. Even Pearlie had no appetite for this meal. It had been 3 days since the massacre at Timber Notch. Smoke Jensen, wearing a black suit and black bolo tie, was leaning against the wall in the kitchen of his house with his arms folded across his chest. Sally, who was wearing a black hat, was fussing with the veil, part of the funeral ensemble she was wearing. Pearlie was sitting at the table eating a piece of pie left over from supper the night before. Pearlie didn't own a black suit, but he was wearing a brown suit and a white shirt. The door opened and Cal came in. Cal didn't have a suit of any kind, but he was wearing clean jeans and a clean and pressed white shirt, complete with closed collar and a bolo tie he had borrowed from Smoke.
Sir, he's all hitched up, Smoke.
Thanks, Cal. If we can pull Pearlie away from the pie, we're ready.
If you're waiting on me, you're backing up. Has anyone heard from Tom Burke yet?
Pearlie climbed into the Surrey. He rode in the front seat alongside Cal, who was driving. Smoke helped Sally into the back seat, then he got in beside her.
Tom wired back that he'd be on the 5 o'clock train this morning, so I suspect he's already here.
How awful this must be for him. There he was, down in Texas, buying cattle, when he gets the telegram that his family and all of his hired hands were killed by Indians.
If it was Indians.
Smoke turned to look back. The house and buildings of his own ranch gleamed brightly in the morning sun. It was neatly kept, a well-laid-out ranch that spoke well of Smoke's success, and even more of Sally's industry and creativity, for it was she who had made Sugarloaf the showplace that it was. Seeing his ranch made Smoke feel an even greater sense of sympathy for his friend Tom Burke, for Tom had been every bit as proud of Timber Notch as Smoke was of Sugarloaf. Now, with his family dead, what was the purpose? There were scores of buggies, surreys, buckboards, wagons, carriages, and horses around the cemetery in Big Rock. For Tom Burke was a well-liked and highly respected man in the area. Ben Goodpasture and one of the hired hands who had been killed at Tom's ranch had been buried the day before. Even before Tom returned, he'd made arrangements by telegram to pay for their funeral. The other two hired hands had been sent by train back to their families, one in St. Louis, the other in Memphis, also at Tom's expense. The funeral today was for Joe Ellen, Tom Jr., who was called Buddy by everyone, and Sue Ann. Cal parked the Surrey behind one of the several long lines of conveyances that were arrayed around the cemetery. Then the four climbed down and walked up the path toward the three open graves. There were more than 500 people gathered for the funeral. That number included nearly everyone from Big Rock, as well as people from all over the Los Animas County. When Smoke and his companions reached the top of the hill where the three were to be buried, Smoke saw Tom Burke sitting in a chair next to the open graves. Tom's uncovered head was bowed, his silver hair shining. Smoke knew that the loss of his family was a particularly cruel blow for Tom, because family life had come late to him.
Oh, Smoke, look at the poor man. Have you ever seen anything so sad? We must speak to him.
All right.
The four moved through the crowd until they reached Tom. From this position, they could see the three coffins waiting to be lowered into the openings. One full-sized and two smaller ones. The air was redolent with the many floral arrangements that were scattered around, including a full bouquet of roses on top of the larger coffin and a single rose on top of each of the two smaller coffins, red for Sue Ann, yellow for Buddy.
Oh, Tom, I am so sorry about this.
Sally leaned down to embrace their friend and neighbor.
Thank you,
Tom.
Smoke took his friend's hand. It was all he could think to say.
Smoke, I don't aim to just let this go.
No, I didn't expect you would.
Can I count on you?
Smoke felt, rather than saw, Sally's quick glance toward him.
Yes, of course you can.
Pearly and Cal paid their respects as well. Then the four of them moved away from the bereaved rancher, finding a nearby place to stand that would keep them away from the crowd, yet afford them a good view.
What was that all about?
What?
He said he wasn't going to let it go. Then he asked if he could count on you. You said, and I quote, "Yes, of course you can."
I'm sure he intends to go after whoever did this.
Why? Going after the murderers isn't going to bring Tom's family back.
I know it won't, but that's not the point.
Smoke put his arm around Sally and pulled her closer to him.
I don't quite know how to explain it, Sally, but leaving Sugarloaf this morning, I looked back at it and thought about it, and you, and, well, I reckon it gave me a deeper feeling about what Tom's going through right now. I know we can't bring his family back, but getting the ones who did it and making them pay, that can go a long way toward bringing him some peace of mind. And if there's any way I can help him do that, I aim to do it. I hope you understand.
Whether I understand or not, you're going to help him find the renegade Indians who did this, aren't you?
I reckon I am. But it would be a lot easier with me if you understood and approved.
Of course I understand. You have a tremendous generosity of spirit, Smoke Jensen. I think that is one of the reasons I fell in love with you.
The preacher stood up then, and the buzz of conversation halted. The tall, gaunt man looked out over the assembled mourners, giving them a moment to interrupt their conversations and focus on the task at hand, that of burying some of their own kind. Once he had their attention, the preacher delivered a homily, invoking God's wrath upon the evil savages who would perpetrate such a thing. After that, he reminded everyone of the promise of a joyous reunion in the hereafter. Finally, after the coffins were lowered into the grave, the preacher invited Tom to drop a handful of earth onto each of them. As Tom did so, the preacher intoned his final prayer.
For as much as it hath pleased Almighty God, in his wise providence, to take out of this world the souls of Joe Ellen, Sue Ann, and Thomas Jr., we therefore commit their bodies to the ground, earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, looking for the general resurrection in the last day, the life of the world to come through our Lord Jesus Christ, at whose second coming in glorious majesty to judge the world, the earth, and the sea, shall give up their dead, and the corruptible bodies of those who sleep in him shall be changed, and made like unto his own glorious body, according to the mighty working whereby he is able to subdue all things unto himself. Amen.
When the funeral was over, the mourners began leaving the cemetery, walking quietly through the nearly 100 tombstones that marked the last resting places of the late citizens of Big Rock. Like the living citizens of a town, the deceased ran the gamut from innocent children to murderers who were there because they had paid the ultimate penalty to the state. Four of the graves were so recent that the pile of dirt was still fresh over them. Those were the graves for the two would-be bank robbers and for Richmond Flowers and Deputy Wallace. One by one, the mourners went their own way, some on foot, others on horseback, and still others by buggy, surrey, carriage, buckboard, or wagon.
He's still there, isn't he?
Sally climbed into the surrey.
He's all alone.
Settling into his seat, Smoke looked back toward the three graves. Only one person remained, and that was Tom Burke, still sitting in the chair that had been put there for him by Nunley Welch, the undertaker.
Looks like it.
Oh, Smoke, I feel so sorry for him. I wish there was something we could do for him.
There's nothing we can do to bring his family back.
Do you think it was Indians?
I don't know. I do know this. If it was Indians, It had to be a band of renegades. I'm sure it wasn't any of the regular tribes. We haven't had any Indian trouble in years. Soon as I can get around to it, I plan to have a good long look around over there.
Then you're going after whoever did it?
I am, as soon as Tom feels up to going. I don't think he's quite finished saying goodbye yet.
I'm glad you're going with him, Smoke. I only wish I could go.
Don't think I don't believe for one minute that you couldn't handle it. But I think I'd rather you and Cal stay back to watch the ranch.
Wait a minute, you mean you're not gonna let me go with you?
Cal.
Sure, I'll stay here.
I knew I could count on you.
Sam Covington went straight from the funeral to the telegraph office. The Indian attack on Tom Burke's ranch was a tragedy of tremendous proportions. In fact, Covington cannot recall any other incident in the brief history of the little town or even longer history of the county that could quite compare to it. Covington was sorry it happened, but it had happened, so it just didn't make sense not to take advantage of the situation. Covington was a man with political ambition, and he made no effort to hide that ambition. He wasn't that great an admirer of Governor Cooper. In fact, when Cooper was running for election, Covington chose to support him only because Cooper was obviously losing, and if Covington could turn it around, well, it would put Cooper deeply in his debt. Covington did turn it around, running a brilliant campaign for Cooper, which ultimately snatched victory from the jaws of defeat. And he was still calling the shots for Cooper. Cooper was going to be a one-term governor, and Covington would see to that. Then, after Cooper stepped down, Covington intended to run for governor. And in Covington's grand scheme of things, he too would be a one-term governor. But he would persuade the legislature to send him to the U.S. Senate. From the Senate, there was only one more step up the ladder, to the office of the President of the United States. And who was to say that Covington couldn't take that step? Fred Dunn, the Western Union clerk, looked up as Covington went into his office.
Is the funeral over?
Yes.
I thought it must be. When I saw all the traffic out on the road, I wish I could have gone pay my respects, but the wire has to be manned 24 hours a day.
And it's a fine job you're doing, too. Has there been any reply to the wire I sent this morning?
Yes, here it is.
Fred picked up an envelope from a small pile that was on the desk. Covington received the envelope, then tore it open quickly and began to read.
You are hereby appointed to rank of full colonel in state militia. Stop. Incumbent with rank is authority to raise and equip one cavalry regiment. Stop. Once regiment is raised and ready, you are to embark on campaign against Indians who attacked Tom Burke Ranch. Stop. You are further authorized to use all force required. End.
The telegram had been sent by Gerald Cooper, the governor. Smiling, Covington put the telegram back in its envelope, and then put the envelope in his pocket.
So am I to call you Colonel now?
Yes. For now.
Although he didn't say it out loud, Covington thought that if things went well, and by God, so far they had gone very well, Fred and everyone else would be calling him governor. After taking Sally back home, Smoke got out of his suit, put on his jeans and a shirt, then changed from the Surrey to the buckboard for a drive back to town. Before he could leave on an extended campaign with Tom Burke, he would need some things from the store. Going into the hardware store, he gave his list to the clerk.
Phew! You've got quite a list here, Smoke. 3 boxes of .44 caliber bullets, 3 boxes of .44-40, 10 sticks of dynamite, 2 boxes of Lucifers, 1 gallon of kerosene, rope. What are you going to do with all this stuff?
Pay for it. That is, if you've got it. And we'll get it packed for me.
That's what I get for being too nosy, I guess. Yes, sir, I've got it. It'll take me a good half hour or so to get it all gathered and packed, though.
I can wait. I'll be over at Longmont's.
Leaving the store, Smoke saw someone posting a circular. And curious, he went over to read it.
Attention. Indian fighters having been authorized by Governor Cooper of Colorado to raise a militia company of cavalry. If for immediate service against hostile Indians. I call upon all who wish to engage in such service to contact me soonest for the purpose of enrolling your names and joining your friends and neighbors for this great adventure. Weapons and uniforms will be furnished by the state. Pay and rations will be the same as U.S. Army. Those who volunteer shall be entitled to all horses and other plunder as may be confiscated from the Indians. Colonel Samuel B. Covington, Covington's Militia Commanding.
Longmont Saloon was more crowded than normal for this time of day. That was understandable, though, since nearly every ranch hand within 50 miles of town had been given the day off in order to attend the funeral. As might be expected, the conversation was about the funeral and what happened out at Timber Notch. Seeing Smoke standing at the bar, Lewis came over to see him.
It was a very impressive funeral, didn't you think?
Yes, it was.
Tom took it real hard. Of course, under the circumstances, I can see why. Smoke, is he going to be all right? Do you think there's anything I can do for him?
He'll be all right. He's just got to get through this.
Smoke nodded toward a table in the back corner, where half a dozen men were standing in line. Sam Covington, normally a lawyer, was sitting at the table, wearing the uniform and insignia of an Army colonel.
I see Mr. Covington is busy.
Hell, it's Colonel Covington now. I don't think he isn't quick to let you know that. Yesterday was a lawyer foreclosing on widows and orphans, and today he's their savior.
How did he ever talk the governor into giving him a commission in the first place? What does he know about the military?
About the military? Not a blasted thing. But he doesn't need to know anything. Don't forget, he was the governor's right-hand man during the last election.
If I had known the governor's character judgment was so weak, I never would have voted for him. Hell, now that I think about it, I didn't vote for him.
I can't find anybody who did vote for him, or at least who will own up to it now. There he is, sitting up in Denver as our governor. And here's Sam Covington, colonel of militia.
Well, I don't guess it can hurt anything for them to dress up like soldiers, then ride around in the countryside for a while.
If that's all that happens, I agree with you. Knowing Covington, there's no telling what that dumb bastard might stir up.
Although he was too far away to know he was being talked about, Covington looked up from his table and saw Smoke and Lewis standing together at the bar.
Excuse me, boys.
Stepping up to the bar, Covington slapped a coin down.
Mr. Longmont, another for Mr. Jensen, if you don't mind.
Nodding, Lewis poured another drink for Smoke.
Thanks.
Mr. Jensen, I hope you have no hard feelings about the things I said during the trial. I was just trying to win the case.
You lost.
Yes, I did. And though I hate to lose anything, I must confess that I'm glad Tatum isn't free because of me. I never would have thought he would do something like kill Deputy Wallace and the judge. That was a terrible thing. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
Well, enough about Mr. Tatum. He'll wind up in custody again somewhere. His kind always does. And I won't be defending him next time.
No, I don't suppose so.
Anyway, right now, we have an even bigger problem on our hands.
Now, what problem would that be?
What do you mean, what problem? Why, Indians, of course. My God, man, you know what happened out at Timber Notch?
No, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You were at the funeral. I saw you there.
Yes, I was. Tom Burke is a close personal friend of mine.
Then I don't understand. Why do you say you don't know what happened out there?
Because I don't know. At this point, I don't think anyone knows.
Of course we know. Everyone knows. The ranch was attacked by Indians.
Is that a fact?
Of course it is. Everyone knows that it was Indians who murdered Tom Burke's family and Hans.
Covington, do you have any idea how long it's been since we had any Indian trouble in these parts?
Quite a while, I'm sure. Do you know anything about volcanoes, Mr. Jensen? Sometimes they remain dormant for hundreds of years before they erupt.
And you're suggesting that the Indians are what? Like a volcano?
The comparison isn't strained. We all know what the Indians are capable of. And don't think for one minute that they aren't living out there in their reservation villages, envious of the lives we lead and seething inside with hate and resentment. I've always known they could break out of the reservation someday. Well, they have. And now it's our duty to punish them severely enough that they will think long and hard before they ever try anything like that again. So, what do you say, Mr. Jensen?
What do I say about what?
I'm asking you to join my militia as a scout. The rank of major comes with it. That would put you second in command.
And allow me a share of the booty.
Yes, indeed.
No thanks.
What? Jensen, do you realize that by your action, you are showing that you don't care about what happened to poor Tom Burke?
You do have a way with words, don't you, Covington? You don't let the truth bother you. I suppose that's what makes you a good lawyer.
It's just that I am surprised that you don't want to help your friend.
I'm going to help him, but I'm going to do it my own way.
What does that mean, in your own way?
It means I have no intention of running around with a bunch of fools in pretend army uniforms who'll probably get lost before they get more than 10 miles out of town.
You need have no fear about that. I'll be leading them.
My point. Exactly. Using both hands and a compass, you couldn't find your own ass.
We'll just see about that. After we make a couple of successful scouts and kill a few Indians, we'll bring this uprising to a halt.
Uprising? There is no uprising.
No? How do you explain what happened out at Tom Burke's ranch?
If it was Indians, it was a party of renegades at best. I hardly think we have an Indian war on our hands.
An Indian is an Indian. And you might remember that a famous general once said the only good Indian is a dead Indian. Anyway, we shouldn't be arguing about this, you and I. After all, we are the natural leaders of this community. We should be allies in this noble endeavor. So what do you say, man? Will you join us?
I thank you for the drink.
Covington stared at Smoke for a moment longer. Then he turned and walked back to his table.
You think he finally got the message?
Maybe. But it takes a while for anything to get through a head as thick as his is.
All right, men. I'm still signing up volunteers for the cavalry. Who's next?
At the far end of the bar, a small man with weasel eyes finished the rest of his beer, then wiped his mouth with his sleeve. Turning, he left the bar, then pushed through the batwing doors and walked out into the street. He headed toward the livery. Standing just inside a Dutch door looking through the open top was Pig Iron McCord.
Did you see him, Wheeler?
Yeah, I seen him. Jensen's in there all right.
Good, good. Now it's time to pay him back for what he did.
Pig Iron, you sure you want to do this? I mean, Tatum told us to just hang around, see what's going on, and then get back to him. He didn't say nothing about killing anyone.
If you got no stomach, you can go on back, far as I'm concerned, but I aim to kill that bastard Smoke Jensen.
Pig Iron opened the door so Wheeler could come into the livery. The three men in the livery stable were Pig Iron McCord, Jason Harding, and Dirk Wheeler. Because Pig Iron didn't want to be recognized, he'd send Wheeler into the saloon to see if Jensen was there. Harding, who had had his own run-in in the saloon, had also stayed away. He was stretched out on the barn floor, his head on a sack of grain and his hat pulled down over his eyes.
Seems to me like killing a man is a long way to go just to get back at him for whooping you.
Well, now, that's just because you didn't see how bad old Pig Iron here got his ass whooped.
I told you he got a lucky punch. Besides which, you ain't got a lot of room to talk. Seems to me like you got your head bashed in as well. Hell, I think you'd be with me on this.
I am with you. I'm here, ain't I? I just want to make sure nothing goes wrong. Yeah, I asked some of the boys back at Risco about Smoke Jensen, and from what they tell me, he ain't a man you want to mess with. And I don't aim to get myself killed before we get some of that money Tatum's been talking about.
There ain't none of us gonna get killed if we all stick together. What's going on over in that saloon anyhow? There's an awful lot of people just going in and out.
They're raising an army. There's a man in there in an army suit signing folk up to go fight the Indians.
Well, is that a fact? You gotta hand it to old Tatum. He was right about that. After these fellas get all dressed up in their army suits and march around and salute for a while, they're gonna get tired of playing army. When that happens, they're gonna attack some Indians somewheres, and as soon as they do that, We got us customers for our rifles.
Yeah, well, I wish Jensen'd get back out here so we can get this over with. I'm hungry.
Oh, you're always hungry or sleepy or thirsty or got a piss or something. I swear, you bitch, if they hung you with a new rope.
I seen Muley Thomas hung with a new rope. Old Muley didn't bitch about it. He didn't do nothing, except maybe twitch a little.
Don't talk like that. I don't like to hear that kind of talk.
Quiet. Here it comes.
We gonna shoot him, Pig Iron? Or we gonna brace him?
I say, let's just shoot the son of a bitch and be done with it.
No, I want him to know who it was that shot him. I want my ugly goddamn face to be the last thing that son of a bitch sees before he dies.
Pig Iron, I don't know. I told you, I heard a lot about him since we run into him. They say he's faster than grease lightning.
I ain't no virgin in this business. I think I could beat him.
You thought you could whoop him, too. But look what happened.
I told you he got a lucky punch. Anyway, there are three of us. I don't care how fast that son of a bitch is. You can't take all three of us. I say we brace him.
You brace him? I ain't gonna.
What?
You want to kill that son of a bitch from here? I'm with you. If you're counting on me walking out there in the street and calling him out, well, you're going to have to do without me.
And without me.
You two yellow-belly bastards.
We kill him from here, or you go it alone.
All right, if that's the way it has to be, then that's the way it has to be. I don't care how we kill the son of a bitch, as long as we kill him.
The three men, in agreement now as to their tactics, walk back to the Dutch door and look through the top window. Jensen was nowhere to be seen.
Oh, what the hell? What happened to him?
There he is, over there, going into the hardware store.
By the time Pig Iron saw him, Jensen was just going into the store with the door closing behind him.
All right, we'll get him when he comes out.
I got everything you asked for, Smoke. Beans, bacon, coffee, sugar, salt, flour, three boxes of 44s, three boxes of 44 40s, and two boxes of Lucifer's. That comes to $3.25. We need help carrying it out to your buckboard?
No, thank you. I can get it.
Here it comes!
They pulled the hammers back on their pistols as they took aim.
Wait until it gets in the buckboard. It'll be a closer shot.
They watched as Smoke put his boxes in back, then untied the reins and climbed into the driver's seat. Suddenly, the stagecoach rolled into town. The six team hitched, sweating and breathing hard as they trotted the final 100 yards. The stage was filled with passengers and piled high on top with luggage and cargo. Its route to the stage depot went right between the livery and the hardware store.
Oh, damn it!
They waited for a moment. Then when the stage was gone, they raised their pistols again. But Smoke wasn't there.
What the hell? Where is he? What happened to him?
There he is, down there.
Smoke had driven away, matching the speed of the stagecoach all the way down to the depot. As a result, he'd been shielded by the coach until he was now too far down the street for any kind of shot.
Now what?
Pig Iron put his pistol back in his holster.
Let's go on over to the saloon and see what we can find out about this army they're raising.
Thought you didn't want to go to the saloon.
I said I didn't want to be seen by Jensen. Now that he's gone, it don't matter whether I'm seen or not.
The saloon sounds good to me. Yeah, I like that idea. In fact, it's your best idea yet.
When Lewis Longmont saw Pig Iron and Harding come into a saloon, he got up from his table and walked over to confront him.
I'll take your money, McCord, but I won't take anything else from you. You stay away from my girls, and don't start anything.
All me and my pards want is a couple drinks. We ain't looking for no trouble.
Lewis looked toward the bartender, then nodded.
You can serve them.
As the three stood at the bar drinking, they listened to several other conversations, hoping to hear something they could take back to Tatum. Most of the conversation was about the militia company being formed. But Pig Iron heard something that caught his attention right away.
I would have thought Smoke Jensen would have joined up with the militia. Him and old Tom Burke have been friends for a long time.
You heard him say he was going to help in his own way, didn't you?
Well, yeah, but I don't know what that means.
Well, I figure it means he'll be going out on his own to find whoever done this.
On his own? What can he do by his own self?
What can he do? Well, he can track, hunt, shoot, and live out in the mountains better than anyone I ever heard of. If I was the one that done this, I'd rather have two companies of militia after me than have Smoke Jensen dogging my trail.
When do you think he'll leave?
He probably left by now. I was over to the hardware store, and Mr. Clark told me that Smoke bought a lot of provisions to take with him.
Well, what about Mrs. Jensen? You think she'll stay out at the ranch by herself, or will she come to town till he gets back?
Sally? Oh, she'll stay out there and run the ranch. Probably do as good a job with it as any man would.
Probably. I'll say this for her. She is a good-looking woman.
I agree. But if you ever say that around Smoke, you better make damn certain he don't misunderstand it.
You don't have to tell me that. You think I'm some kind of fool?
Well, now, that's good information to know.
Beg pardon?
Oh, never mind. We'll talk about it later.
As Smoke and Pearly were saddling their horses, Cal was leaning against the fence, his arms folded across his chest, looking on with an expression of disappointment.
Cal, didn't anyone ever tell you that if you make a bad face, it could freeze like that? Cheer up.
Easy for you to say you're going. I have to stay here.
I've explained it to you, Cal. Whoever did this, whether it's renegade Indians or just a gang of outlaws, might still be around. If they double back while we're tracking them, we could miss them. That would leave Sugarloaf vulnerable. I'd feel a lot better if you were here with Sally.
Nah, no. Yeah, I'm honored that you trust me with it, but if nothing happens here and you find them, then I'm gonna miss out on it.
I'll tell you all about it.
I'd rather hear it from Smoke. If you tell it, no doubt it'll be a pack of lies.
Well, yeah, it probably will be. But it'll be a lot better story than you can get from a dime novel.
What is this? I expected to see long faces, sad because you're going away. Instead, you're laughing. Are you happy to get away from me?
You know better than that.
I thought you might like a sack full of sinkers for your trip.
You made donuts?
I did. If I told you to go easy on them, to try and make them last a couple of days, would I just be wasting my breath?
Ma'am?
Even as he answered, he was reaching for a second one.
Never mind. Smoke, if you plan on getting any of those, you'd better carry the sack yourself.
Looks that way, doesn't it?
Smoke took the sack from Pearly and stuck it down into his own saddlebag.
Don't worry, Cal. I held some back for us.
Well, for once, I won't have to fight Pearly for him.
I don't have any idea when I'll be back. Just look for me when you see me. Take care.
I will. Smoke, be careful.
Careful? Damn, now there's an idea. Hadn't even thought about that.
Oh, go on. The sooner you leave, the better.